Welcome back to the Active Life Podcast. I'm Dr. Sean Pastuch, and I'm your host. Today's guest is Noah Kagan, the 30th employee ever at Facebook, which is a company that now has thousands of employees. So to be number 30, it's pretty damn good. Noah has since gone on to launch Sumo.com and AppSumo.com, which are both websites meant to help small businesses gain exposure and grow. This podcast is very interesting to me because we didn't really talk very much about Noah at all. He was more interested in learning about me, and I found myself in the end realizing, which I've realized a few times in the recent past, that the smartest people are the ones who learn the most. So while I talked a lot on this podcast about ourselves, I realized I was in the presence of somebody much smarter than me because he spent the entire time learning while I spent much of the time speaking. But that's okay, right? Because we have a podcast where most of our time is spent learning. So this is a little bit of a selfish error. This podcast is one that you're going to learn all about me and Active Life. Noah flipped the script on me, and all of the questions that we discuss are about Active Life. How did it start? Why do we do it? Where is it going? What is it like to run it? You know, what does it need to grow? All of the things that you guys probably don't think about very often are what we talk about on this show. We also talk about the things you guys do think about. How do we get an athlete to be better? What separates an elite athlete from an average athlete, from a non-athlete? Who is our target market? Who are we working the best with? All of that kind of stuff we do talk about. We talk about energy balance. We talk about mindfulness. We talk about strength. All the things that you know we do, we talk about. But we talk about a lot of the stuff that I think that usually doesn't get aired. You know, what's going on in the backside of the business. So I think that you guys might really enjoy it. I know for sure my mom is going to enjoy it. So mom, if you're listening, this one's for you. Yeah, we'll get you right to it in a second. In the meantime, guys, if you enjoy learning about us, if you enjoy learning about Active Life, if you enjoy learning about anything that we talk about on this podcast, I'm asking you to please share it. Find a friend who you think would value this and share the episode. You click those three little dots, you took share episode, copy the link, send it to a friend, send it to five friends. We really want to grow this thing because we want to be able to help as many people as possible. It's podcasts that kind of taught me personally how to do a lot of the things that I'm currently doing, including things that I'm learning how to do on a regular basis. They continue to help me. So I would love to be able to have that impact on other people. So please, if you feel like it's valuable, share this podcast with somebody else who you think would learn from it. Also, the way that we get found is on iTunes when people rate the podcast and comment about their rating. We have a 5-star rating with 106 reviews at the point that I'm releasing this, and that's awesome, but I'd love to have a 5-star rating with 1,000 reviews, and when we get there, I'll want 10,000. So do me a favor, kick in, help us out. We want to grow. We need your help to do it. That's it. Let's get to learning about me today. Here we go. Noah Kagan interviews Dr. Sean on Dr. Sean's podcast. All right. So Noah Kagan, welcome to the Active Life podcast.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. This is, I have a nanny who is here right now watching my daughters. And I've told my wife last night, I'm like, this is one of those episodes that I'm like, I don't really know how it's going to go. I don't really know what I'm supposed to even do on it. So I'm excited about that.
It's kind of interesting. I've been thinking about that in general, where things in life that we get excited about sometimes are just the unknown. And especially as we get older, you know, especially with kids now, it's like, once you're older, you're like, yeah, this is how it's always done, or I've already done it this way. So I think with, I don't have kids, but that's what I imagine when you have kids, like you see it kind of in a new way again.
Yes. And I would say that the biggest thing for me is I was worried when I had kids, I was the guy who was working 15 hours a day before I had the kids, and I wasn't really moving anywhere. I was really just working hard without any kind of forward movement in my businesses. And having the kids, knowing the kids were coming, the first one really forced me to focus and create order in my life such that I couldn't work 15 hours because I wanted to be a father too. I wanted to be a husband too. So it forced me to get rid of a lot of the extraneous things that I was doing that really somebody else should be doing, which was cool because it helped us to move forward.
So that's interesting. And I think with this episode, we're going to be talking about, you know, performancekrx.com and your business and how this is all going. So were you working on this or were you doing something else at that time?
So we hadn't even considered starting this yet. I owned a rehab clinic and I owned a CrossFit gym. And at the time I owned an event company as well. So it was like, okay, you're doing all this stuff. My goal was always, since I'm like 3 years old, I knew I wanted scale in something. And here I was with three companies, none of which were scalable. So I was busting my ass all day, every day to try to get them to be as well-known, established, and big as I possibly could. And it was kind of like running on this treadmill to nowhere.
Interesting. Well, it's funny because a lot of people would joke the non-CrossFitters would be like, oh, you have CrossFit and then you have to go to the gym right afterwards.
Right.
I guess you probably have a nutrition line to finish them off.
I don't.
Not yet. Well, that's a whole nother business stuff we can talk about, which is like, how do you just keep serving your customers better?
Sure.
You know, I think we're always trying to find new things. And so how did you transition from a gym and then the care for people into more of the web business?
Yeah. So I ended up bringing on when my wife gave me the ultimatum, not that she was going to leave me, but the, you need to figure this thing out because I'm not going to be a single mom who has a husband. I ended up bringing a partner into my clinic. I had just split with my partner in the gym. So I brought a partner into my clinic who was doing a lot of stuff in strength and conditioning that was not CrossFit, even though he also owned a CrossFit gym. So now he came on as my clinic partner and I was doing a lot of stuff from the soft tissue perspective, working hands-on with people. And I would get people who were asking me questions from all over because I had some high-profile CrossFit athletes who were my patients. So I would get the message from California, hey, so-and-so said you helped them a lot with this. What can I do? And my answer was always, I don't know. You know, find somebody like me in California and go work with them. So then my partner came out and I helped him, I believe, to get better locally, working hands-on with people through the system that we were using in the clinic already. He introduced me to the system that he was using to write programming for athletes and to execute training sessions with athletes in person. And as soon as he introduced that to me, my mind went to, we can do this for anybody anywhere in the world. So we should start.
So how long did that transition take? How did you actually do the transition? Because it's one of these things I think a lot of people have a similar aspiration. They're either running, you know, some type of offline business or they have something going, but they're like, oh, I want to transition to online so I can, you know, it can work while I sleep.
Mm-hmm. So the first thing is, I think people may or may not know this about me, but I have an uncomfortable level of comfortability with failure and the unknown. Like I call it an uncomfortable comfortability because I know I will do a lot of things in the rest of my life that will be miserable failures just because I'm so comfortable taking that chance. I've had a backpack company that failed. I had an event company that I wouldn't consider to be a success. I had a personal training business in like where I was sending trainers to people's homes and hotels that didn't work out. And there's a litany of things that I've done that didn't work. So when I heard him describe to me, like, this is how I'm working with an athlete in person, I was like, I need you to teach that to me because I'm really confident that you don't actually need to be there to do this with somebody. And I feel like I know someone who's really good who can help us put this on the internet. We just need to figure out how to create something from it that's a system that people can easily follow and understand and get the results that they're actually craving from. So we went with it.
So did you take your training and his training and put it, and you had someone else put it on this website?
Yeah. So basically my training, what my training allowed us to do to really simplify it, mine was, this is your range of motion now. This is where it should be. If your range of motion is this, these are the things in the gym that we don't want you to be doing just yet because they're not, the cost benefit just doesn't exist for you there. That's positive. And that's not to say my partner didn't know how to do that stuff. It's just that he wasn't focused on it as much. His focus was, hey, if you're really strong in this, but you're really weak in that, you're going to run into a situation where you're going to use this more than that, and that's going to cause you pain and irritation long term. So let's build your strength up in these things so that you're more balanced and capable of doing things properly. So what we did was we took the two systems that we were both working in and we said, if we could first look at the range of motion of somebody and determine what's good for them, what's bad for them, what's great for them, all of those things, and then start to look at, if we're not with them, how do we change that range of motion through adding strength or length? And we put those together, we're going to have a pretty rock solid system to help people get well. And we might not need to be there at all. Let's try it.
One thing, just taking a step back with what you guys help people with, what's some basics that like everyone should be doing daily for their range of motion and mobility? It's something that, have you heard of ROMWAD?
Yeah, sure. I know one of the owners of ROMWAD is a friend of mine.
Mike sent me over that, Mike from Brute Strength. Mm-hmm. And I started looking up YouTube and I'm like, I've actually every day, because I work out a fair amount. So now I'm actually trying to be more mobile and just get more stretching on. I'm curious, what are some of the basics?
So the big basics that I like to tell people to do is you have to get into your end ranges every day or you're not going to have them. You know, if you do your job every day, let's pretend you're an accountant or you're a teacher and you go a day without teaching or a day without looking at numbers, it's not a big deal. But if that starts to become a habit, where now, okay, a month, 2 months, 3 months have gone by since you've done it, all of a sudden it gets harder to get back into. So I like to tell people, spend 7 minutes at minimum in the bottom of a squat. You know, no weight, just get in the bottom of a squat for 7 minutes.
Just sit down there for 7 minutes?
Yeah, accumulate it throughout the day. You don't have to do it 7 straight. But people will ask me, how'd you come up with 7 minutes? You know, what's the science behind that? I'm like, oh, there is none. I just figured you could handle 7 minutes. You know, it doesn't have to be that, you know, empirical data. So to me, I'm like, 30 minutes would be better. But if I told you 30, would you do it? Or would you just look at me like I'm crazy and never try it? If I tell you 7, it's more than 1 or 2 and you're likely to give it a whirl. So that's one of the things I tell people to do. I like to tell people that from a movement standpoint, it's important that they actually know what they can do and what they can't do. So being mindful when they move actively, you know, like when you go for a walk, if you're going for a walk just to go for a walk, can you feel the ground under your feet? Is your mind clear enough to even know that you're standing on grass or concrete or brick? Can you tell the difference right now in conversation? I stop you, boom, what are you walking on? If your mind isn't clear enough to do that when you're on a walk just to walk, you have bigger issues than your mobility.
Quick side question. I don't know. Do you have an editor?
Not really, but I don't care. You can ask the side questions.
No, is this recording?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was just like, oh, I didn't know if it was recording or not.
Yeah. But I'm an open book. Right. There's nothing you can, like, you're not going to ask me something and have me be uncomfortable about answering it.
Well, I guess what I was curious. So, I will come to the business of it, but I actually find this really interesting. Mm-hmm. And so are most people just not doing enough of this? And the other part I was thinking is that what have you changed? What did you used to say, hey, this is what you should be doing. And then you're like, actually, I don't think people need to be doing it anymore.
So the answer to the first question, can you repeat it one more time? Just, I had a good answer and then it just slipped out of my mind. I thought about the second one. What have I changed?
Yes.
So the biggest thing that we've changed is, you know, the idea that these numbers need to be in line 100% or you're going to have issue. And what we started to realize is that there's a threshold, depending on what sport you play, if you're in the real world or if you're on a field, and sports are inherently unsafe. So the idea of I'm going to balance all of these things out and I'm not going to get hurt because of it is novice thinking. People are still going to get hurt by accident and you need to be able to skew things in a certain way. The other thing that I realized that I didn't realize until about a year ago, and that's kind of when our company started to hockey stick, is that the mindset of the athlete is more important than the physical set of the athlete. Meaning that if they're just going through the world every day, working as hard as they possibly can without thinking about why they're doing that work, then no matter how good they are right now, they're heading towards a big crash.
Go on with that.
So let's take an athlete or an entrepreneur or a teacher. It doesn't matter what you're talking about. If they're like, I just want to be the best in the world at this. So they just put their head down and do the work every day without any thought for what the work is doing for them. Then ultimately they end up doing too much work in the wrong direction and they either burn out or they get hurt. That's one of the things that we find very commonly.
What do you mean? I mean, it sounds like you've worked with some, you know, very significant athletes who have been very successful. What has separated them versus people who don't make it to that level? That maybe that aspired to it.
There's a few things. Number one is those people really want to be there. You know, and when I say really want to be there, I mean that they don't just show up and work out. They show up and work out because they have this internal need to achieve that other people don't. They think that they're working out hard and they think that this is what they need to do. But the most elite of elite in a fitness sport especially are not killing themselves every day when they work out. If they are, you're getting hurt over time. But people who see what goes on at the CrossFit Games at the top level of this thing, all they see is when these people kill themselves in workouts. So they think that's what they need to do every time that they work out in order to get to that level. And that's just flat and wrong. Another thing that we see that's different is genetically, they're predisposed to being better at this stuff. You know, there's absolutely a correlation between what you're given and what you can earn. You know, if no matter how much I squat or deadlift or run, I'm not going to be, you know, deadlifting 700 pounds and squatting 6. It's just not in my future. It's not on my frame. And then just, you know, a lot of nowadays these people do it full time. It's their livelihood, where other people are like, oh, I'm going to work as a teacher during the day. I'm going to be mom at night and I'm going to compete to go to the CrossFit Games in between. And that's just not realistic. You know, Mike Trout isn't doing that with his baseball career. You shouldn't be doing it with your CrossFit career.
What is the behind the scenes? I think a lot of times when we see these super athletes, we just see them in their peak performance. So we only see, you know, Steph Curry or any of the CrossFit guys or anything when they're actually playing on the championship or on the game. Mm-hmm. And we don't see the behind the scenes. I guess what I was curious, not as much the nutrition, but more of the recovery stuff. And I think that's why I've gotten more excited about stretching and mobility. And, you know, I'm 35, almost 36, where mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, what things should I be doing behind the scenes to be able to keep performing as a super athlete?
So a few things. Number one, you're most of the people who we work with. They haven't accomplished as much as you have in business, but they're 35 to 50 years old and they're not going to the CrossFit Games and they're not going to be on the USTA next year and they're not going to be in professional baseball. You know, most people in the world are not that. But recovery wise, I don't find the elites to actually be doing that much better of a job than the average athlete, just because they need so much more. So they do a better job when they do it, but they need so much more because of how much more work they put in. The kind of recovery that you need to be doing, the things you need to be focusing on are being mindful of what your body is trying to tell you. If you go into the gym, and I don't know what modality of fitness you like to use. So are you going into a standard gym with selectorized equipment and dumbbells and free weights and group classes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you walk in, just like anybody who would walk into any gym, there are days that you're like, man, I feel good today. I'm really going to get after this. I slept well last night. My diet's been good. My relationship is good. All that stuff is in line. I'm going to go push hard today. That's wise. There are people, though, who are waking up in the morning saying, I'm stressed from my kid right now. Didn't sleep well last night. My diet's been crap. My boss is on my ass about work. I just need to get after this workout and crush it. That's not wise because you're not optimized to perform, but you're asking your body to go to a level that you don't typically go to just so you can burn off that negative energy. So when I say the best thing you can do is listen to your body, it's walking into the gym. Do I feel good? Awesome. Maybe go a little bit further than you plan to go that day because you feel good. Do you feel bad? Okay, there's no shame in wrapping it up a little bit earlier or going a little bit lighter than you wanted to preserve yourself and play again tomorrow.
You know, are there other things? So what are you actually suggesting there? So if, like today, I started adding boxing once a week, which mm-hmm. I really enjoyed.
Getting punched or just throwing punches.
I did the punching one a few months ago and I liked it. I just need to find one that's convenient. So I go to more to like a boxing gym. That's just more of a workout. Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting like, if you're feeling good, go a little further. And if you're not feeling as good one day, just take it back a bit.
Yeah. You know, so I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that people make who even follow our program, because it's hard to get that through to people on a regular basis. I write this thing for you and it's elegant and it's meant to be exactly what you should do on paper, given your circumstances. But I didn't talk to you yesterday. You know, maybe you had a fight with your girlfriend last night and you didn't sleep very well. And now today I have you set up to do a bunch of high box step ups at a weight that's hard for you. And I'm pushing you towards your end. you probably shouldn't do it today. You know, maybe you should just be like, hey, I went a little bit lighter. I'm really stressed right now. I went out for a walk, got my mind together, went into the gym, did a modified version of what you asked. I'll hit that workout next week. That's okay. That's smart.
It's interesting. It's kind of almost counterintuitive. I think a lot of times I've heard the opposite, where it's just like, hey, if you're stressed, go to the gym and just give it, you know, go fucking nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And then burn off all the aggression or whatever things are, you know, stressing you out in your life.
And that's fine if you have a plan for what happens afterwards. So what I find is that oftentimes when people do that, they go into the gym, they blow it out, they get after it, and now they come home and they're exhausted. They haven't cooked their meal yet. They haven't planned their meal. They don't know what time they're going to bed. They still have some work to do. So now they get home from the gym, they're exhausted. What they should be doing is resting, refueling, and getting some sleep. And instead they get home and it's like, oh, I didn't cook dinner. I'll just order in. And then they order in, and then they're still in their sweaty clothes. They're eating their crappy dinner, sitting on the couch, watching a movie, trying to get work done at the same time because they still have to cram it. They don't go to bed until 2 a.m. They have to be up at 6 to start the next day. They didn't get the opportunity to recover from what they just did. So if you can discipline yourself to planning the second half of that episode, by all means, go for it. But if you can't recover appropriately from it, it's a recipe for a problem.
Is there anything with nutrition? Well, of course there is. Do you have nutrition suggestions as well? I guess what I'm curious on the thing, I like your angles of what are stuff that people assume, but maybe actually you're wrong.
Mm-hmm. So from a nutrition perspective, I try to stay in my lane really, really well. You know, I can tell you that's healthy, that's not, but I can't tell you this is how much of this you should be eating. This is how you're going to, you know, account for your chicken broth in your macros. I'm not into that. I don't know it as well as other people do, so I let them do their job. And I recommend that anybody who is not really comfortable with their body, with the way that they're recovering, actually find themselves a diet coach. We work with Mike's wife, Working Against Gravity. She has a great company. We've sent clients to a company called The Method out in Australia. We have clients who've gone to a friend of mine named Sarah Pierce, who's a nutrition coach. We have nutrition coaches. Precision Nutrition has coaches. IN3 Nutrition. There's a lot of places that we have sent people to, depending on what their issue is. But we try to stay out of telling them exactly what to eat and what not to eat.
You know, it sounds like I want to come back to the business, but I'm curious. I'm kind of getting the Cliff Notes version of your philosophies. What have you noticed as you've worked? It sounds like you guys have worked with hundreds, if not thousands of people on their bodies.
Yeah, there's a few. I think we're at like 8,000 or 9,000 now.
Holy shit. I guess one thing that I'm always fascinated with health and people's, you know, energy levels and so forth is that what are the biggest things that you've noticed that you've had to help people overcome? Is a lot of it actually like more life issues than their health?
It's perception. So the first thing is I'll answer the question you didn't, that you alluded to not knowing the answer to. And that is what are we trying to do? What's our mission? What's our vision? And our vision is essentially that I don't think that people are inspired by the idea of driving 15 or 20 minutes to the physical therapist's office, getting to wait 15 or 20 minutes once they get there, getting observed by some assistant while they do exercise that they could do at home, and then having to repeat it 3 times a week in place of what they really want to be doing. And then get to pay a copay of 40 or 50 bucks for the pleasure of doing it for 6 to 8 weeks. I think people would prefer to be able to manage themselves, go into a gym, do this at their home, and feel better and empowered that they were able to help themselves. So that's what our company's mission is to do. We coach people to have better movement and better strength to improve their joint health.
Oh, that was kind of confusing. So you're actually suggesting a lot of times people can just do it at their home instead of actually needing to go to a physical therapist?
Absolutely. And any good physical therapist who's going to be honest with you will tell you that physical therapy is not meant to be done under observation of a physical therapist over and over and over again in most cases. It's just that the business model of, okay, come back in 2 weeks and we'll progress that, doesn't work very well.
Yeah, that's how I felt about my real therapist and also my physical therapist, where it was like, all right, we'll come back next week and come back next week. I'm like, bitch, why don't you just fix it? It was like when I had braces. I'm like, dude, just tighten that shit up a lot. Mm-hmm. And let's get it over with. It's like, but they're incentivized to keep me coming back.
Of course. And listen, I understand it. You know, that there's a few things to it. Number one, most of the people who you're going to have do, let's just say, a sideline clamshell exercise, which is very popular in physical therapy for glute activation. If you're having somebody do that, the likelihood that they're going to do it the way you want them to, at the frequency you want them to when they're at home, is very low. So I understand why a physical therapist is like, you need to come in here 3 times a week for your own good. That's real. They're not just full of crap. However, I don't think it gives enough credit to the person who's being prescribed the exercise. Maybe they're not going to follow through on it because your delivery mechanism sucks. Maybe you're giving them a handout that shows them how to do an exercise that looks like it was made in 1970 and they don't believe that it's going to work because you haven't progressed your delivery. You know, so the way we do it is we share it with them in a calendar with a video, with an explanation, with their rep range, with their sets, with their weight. Go do it.
And so how did you guys transition? Because I think there's a lot of people who probably have, you know, local gyms. Does a lot of your runs have local gyms?
Yes.
So how did you make the actual transition of telling people, hey, stop coming here and then let's go online?
So we didn't have to, you know, because we were getting people from places that were not near us. And it became a, how do I do this? And we said, well, here's your workout. You can do it at any gym you want. You can do it in your house if you have the equipment. If you're not already lifting heavy weights, you don't need a lot of equipment.
Was the transition, what was the challenge with the transition? Was it like you kept taking real in-person clients until like the money like matched it, or how did that go?
So there's still an active clinic and there's still an active gym. I'm just not there at this point. I'm focused 100% of my time online. And basically the way that went is the hardest part of it was the communication. If somebody comes into your office and they say, hey, I'm having pain in my quad, for example, and then they point to their hamstring and you're like, okay, that's not the area where you're having pain. So things online, it took a while to understand how to best communicate with somebody to really know what it was that they had issues with, as opposed to just taking them for their word. That was the biggest problem because they don't necessarily know.
That's interesting.
and over time you learn that there's the biggest thing that we're fighting now is two things actually. Number one is pain is perception and it's an emotion. You know, if you think about what you've been through yourself, the things that cause you pain, physical pain now, are probably different than the things that would cause you physical pain when you were 15 years old. Which are different than the things that would cause you physical pain when you were 2 years old. Because pain comes from uncertainty. I don't know if this is going to be a problem long term. Let me get nervous about it and become emotional and then stop doing what I'm doing to avoid this sensation. Right? That's what pain is. So when, go ahead.
Oh, excuse me. No, please.
So when you're dealing with somebody online who you haven't met, who you've only talked to briefly, and they're like, it really hurts when I do this. Being able to extrapolate from them, what does that really mean? What do you mean it hurts? Does it get worse as it goes on? Is it stabbing? Is it achy? Is it throbbing? Is it sore? You know, is it pins and needles? What exactly are you feeling and how is it going as we continue to go on? So one of the biggest, most important things that we did is we built a construct around what pain is so that we could be objective with it with our clients.
Do you guys have a normal diagnosis that people can do at home?
What do you mean?
Is there if there is a checklist of things like, oh, I can do this and then do that?
Yeah. So we have a movement assessment that we have on YouTube that's free. And if you can't move through all the ranges of motion with ease, something is wrong. That's number one. And then we have a strength exam that we administer for people remotely, where we can basically say, okay, you're too good at this as it compares to that. So an example would be, you're really good at pulling weight off the floor, but when I ask you to squat, you have issues with it. You have Achilles tendonitis and you've been going to the physical therapist or the orthopedist or the, you know, podiatrist for your Achilles tendonitis and it's not getting better. They're shooting it with cortisone. They're icing it. They're heating it. They're putting you in braces. They're putting you in orthotics and it's not getting better. And the reason it's not getting better is because you don't load yourself in a squat. You only load yourself in a hinge. So when you need to squat, there's too much force going through your ankles and you're hinging too often. So those muscles become tired. So we need to actually fix your squat and then your Achilles pain is going to go away. That's a difficult conversation to have with a patient who doesn't understand what's going on in the first place.
That's interesting, man. And so what were some of the, what was like the easiest stuff? What stuff worked really well when you started transitioning online? I think people are knowing the challenges. I'm like, yo, just tell me what worked.
Well, the
stuff like if I was trying to take my stuff online.
The stuff that was easy for us was saying something to somebody that just rang true. Like, hey, do you enjoy going to the physical therapist? Are you tired of being told that you need to stay out of the gym? If the answer to the first question was no, and the answer to the second question was yes, we can help you. We have a better solution. You don't necessarily need to go to the physical therapist. You don't necessarily need to stay out of the gym. And people were just like, oh, okay, well, how can I do it? And then we started walking them through it. And it works pretty quickly. So people start to become very excited very fast about their results. And that's how it grew.
Was that mostly from your offline clients? How did you start finding new people that weren't in your local area?
Yeah. So that started with knowing some people, right, who were local sometimes and then remote others. So, for example, one of the first people who we were working with was a woman named Chrissy Mae Cagney. She's a nutrition coach who owns Donuts and Deadlifts. It's an apparel company in the powerlifting and CrossFit world.
Yeah, I think I've heard of those guys.
Mm-hmm. So she came out to the office to get treated. I was helping her. And she was like, oh my God, you have to help my boyfriend. I'm like, okay, who's your boyfriend? And it was this guy who was on, at that point, what's called a grid league team, which is like the other type of competitive fitness that was coming out. And he was living in San Francisco and commuting to New York to see her from time to time. So he would come to New York, we would treat him in the office and then give him a prescription for exercise to do outside of the office. And he would do it. And he was feeling so much better. His lifts started to improve. He started to feel fresher. He started to perform better. And now he's on a team with other competitive exercisers. So of course they want to know what the special sauce is. So now some of them start working with us and other people who he knows start working with us. And then it becomes a, hey, you know what? Would you mind helping us out and actually making a public post about this, putting it on your social media account? If you're really getting that much value out of it, we'd really appreciate it. And they would do it. And then it just grew and grew and grew.
That's interesting. I mean, it was one thing that you said before we even started recording is that you just try to help a bunch of people before you even asked anything. You felt even a little uncomfortable talking about how you've been able to grow this business.
Yeah, you know, it's because it's one of those things where, and I tell people all the time, because I have mentorship clients who will ask me, like, they're trying to grow the same kind of a thing. And they'll ask, you know, how do you reconcile, they don't say it like this, but how do you reconcile wanting to help people and wanting to make money? You know, it's kind of like those things shouldn't go together as far as they're concerned. But to me, it's simple, right? It's that you're dealing with somebody who has a cost. There's an emotional cost to what they're going through. And they'd rather pay you money than deal with that emotional cost. It's actually a relief for a lot of people to pay us the money, to know that they're taken care of, to know that they're going to feel better. And when they do it for free, because we've had free clients, oftentimes the compliance rate is lower, so the results aren't as good. So for me, if I'm in the business of trying to help somebody, the best way to help them is to charge them. Make sure that they know that this is for real. We're not messing around. But I'm uncomfortable from time to time talking about it just because I don't think everybody out there understands that. You know, so when they hear you talk about, oh, we want our company to be able to afford to make $1 million. I want to make $1 million in a month as a company. Somebody hears that and they hear make $1 million. They don't hear be able to spend that money on sending staff out to gyms to teach coaches how to do this kind of stuff for free. They don't hear be able to go into schools to teach kids how to move better, to teach phys ed teachers how to do a better job in their class so the kids are actually engaged and getting what phys ed is supposed to be. You need money to do those things. And that's the kind of stuff we want to make money to be able to do. But I think that when you just talk about the money, people become confused at what your MO is.
What are you noticing, or what are some interesting things that as you're noticing people trying to transition their offline to online businesses?
They don't know how to start. And what I mean by that is they're like, well, how do I get my first online client? Your first online client is someone you know. It's not someone you don't. You're not marketing to people who you've never met before and saying, hey, I can help you with this. Come try it. You're talking to people who you know and saying, hey, I can provide you with a solution that you never have to come see me for, because you already have their trust and they're willing to try something you want them to do. But I think that most people who are out there trying to do something like what we're doing are thinking, oh, well, they work with all of these name athletes, so I need to get one of them in order to do what they're doing. But the truth is, no, you need to get your best friend who has some elbow pain and start helping him and then keep going.
It's interesting because that's one of the things I've done myself and recommended over the years, but it's still easier because if for some reason getting rejected by people you don't know makes life better.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, okay, cool. It wasn't someone I know, so it's not as harsh. It's easier to take.
Yeah, you don't have to live with it. You're not like, oh man, I remember that time that you told me I was stupid.
Yeah, you remember how we used to be friends, bitch?
Right.
I mean, and the second thing I would wonder is that a lot of people then, the next question that the people I'm asking or curious about is then, all right, well, I've got a few people. What do I do next? Now I've gone through my own just network of LinkedIn or Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, whatever. I slide into all the DMs.
Mm-hmm.
What's the next thing that I need to be tackling?
I think if you're asking yourself that, and this might sound like a cop-out, but it's the truth. If you're asking yourself that, you haven't maxed out what you can do for the people who you're working with already. Because for us, it's always been a very natural progression. I've never had to think about what to do next. It's never been, oh, well, how do we move into the next phase of what we're doing here? It's always been, oh man, we've been able to help this person on this level, but he's got all of these friends who we haven't been able to help. How can we get to them? And then we have to solve that problem. So it's not just trying to find solutions that you don't have a problem with. Create a problem by maxing out what you can actually do already.
Interesting. Yeah. So I think your message again is just like, there's more there.
Mm-hmm.
Like as much as you think you've finished it all, there's still room left.
And I can say with a lot of experience and a lot of personal anguish over this, I've always heard people be like, you just need to do a great job and business will find you. And that I believe is bullshit. I don't think you can just do a great job and business will find you. You have to be looking for opportunities. So if I was working with you, Noah, and you're like, oh yeah, my shoulder's really helping. I'm really feeling a lot better. I'd say, oh, that's cool. Where do you work out, by the way? Oh, this place. Do you work out with a trainer? Yeah. I bet you he knows other people who have shoulder injuries, and I would love to work with him to help those clients. Right. So you need to be able to think that way, but it's not what else can I do to what other problem can I solve without considering the problem first?
It is interesting, man. It's so basic, and I think we all want something more complicated.
Yeah, we do. I did. For me, it was what's the Facebook marketing algorithm I need to be hitting? What do the ads need to look like? What you do have to get that stuff right if you want to scale. But if you want to get to a place where scale is actually something you could support, then you need to clean up all the loops on the back end first. We launched a coach program. I'll give you an example. I was like, I want to start educating coaches. So we launched a coach program that was really half-baked. Like it was good. It wasn't a BS program, but it wasn't what it should have been in terms of we hadn't thought about where does it go after this. So we released this program. We sell like 100 people into it. They're enjoying it. And they're all like, what's next? And I was like, I have no idea. We have nowhere to go from here. And then we finally figured out what was next. We actually built out the appropriate coach program, which is what we have on our site now. And those people were like, hey, I'm not getting access to the program anymore. We're like, well, you didn't buy this one. You bought that one. So it was a mess. We ended up giving all of them access to the new program because I found that we just delivered it poorly. But now if someone said, where is that going? It's here, then here, because these are problems that we have found that need to be solved.
Why do this and try to help people run their own businesses instead of just expanding yours to like a global empire?
Because
why not just make...
Yep.
No. That was it.
Because I have a deep sense of, I don't know if it's healthy or not, but paranoia about somebody else supplanting us. And I ask myself all the time, if I wanted to replace my company, if I wanted to be the person who said, okay, I'm going to replace Active Life, they don't need to exist anymore because of what I'm going to create, what would I create? So what I would create is an army of coaches who actively understand what we're doing with clients so that we become an unnecessary resource. And then the person who's educating those coaches becomes the most valuable person in the world. So what we're doing now is teaching those coaches how to do that. Because it's, to me, yeah, there's always going to be people who are going to come to us. But if we're teaching people how to fish, it creates a bigger market. Other people can make money from it. It validates what we're doing. And there'll always be somebody else who wants to know how to do it if they can make money doing it.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I still think I'm like, why not just expand to be able, you know, the number one place online for active recovery?
Well, I think that that's, we do want to go there. And I think that when you're the teacher of teachers, I think that you establish that.
Maybe I'm wrong. As the expert. And then it makes it easier that also the clients also want to go to you guys too.
Correct. You know, when right now when somebody wants to work with our company, I am quite frankly, probably not any better than any of my staff members at writing this kind of stuff. You know, coaching somebody remotely. But if you want to work with me, it's $350. If you want to work with a month, if you want to work with one of my staff members, it's $199 for really the same service. But there's this allure from people in the marketplace. Oh, you're the guy who started it. I want to work with you. And I get that, you know, but I push them towards my staff members because frankly, it allows me to keep growing the company, but I don't see other companies popping up and supplanting us when they've learned from us how to do this and being the authority. I see people looking at us and saying, maybe that option's more expensive than I'd like it to be. I'm going to go to this other person who is still continuing to pay to learn from the main person.
With that's interesting. So you're more organizing the coaches. I guess what got me fascinated is how do you organize all this and where are you spending your time? I think that's something that I've been thinking a lot about with our companies. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, what's the best way to spend my time? So I'm curious how you do that with your business.
So I'm brand new to managing my time. It used to just be, I do everything. But now, and I had a partner, so we do everything. Now, basically what it is we have very clear roles. So I have a staff member who's a partner of mine who, his only responsibility is direct sales and web development. So all of our Facebook marketing, all of our, website features, everything that we do from a technical backend is him, emails, everything. Everything that we do from a where's the company going is me. And once we reach a place where I'm not really great at maintenance tasks, so I'm not really good at doing the same thing every single day, all day long. I need to be in constant motion. So as soon as I create something or come up with the idea for something that's going to work, it's how do we implement it? Who's the best person on our staff to take that and run with it? And then we delegate it.
And then give someone your stuff. I mean, so is your day mostly podcasts? Is it just like you have, is it super structured throughout your week? Or is it more like, hey, one day is something? Like, how do you organize that
so,
time?
So it's actually becoming more structured. It's definitely not mostly podcasts. You know, I mean, this podcast will air, I think the second week in February is when people will be listening to this. So we book out 5 to 7 weeks in advance, and then I don't record for a little bit. So most of the time for me is spent managing our social media account, answering people's questions. You know, if somebody asks a question and I can't answer it on email, I call them. It doesn't matter if they're going to end up paying or not. I call them because I want to know what their problem is. And I want to know if we can solve it, how we can solve it. And if we can't solve it, I write it down and I try to figure out with our staff why we can't and how we can be able to. Because then it becomes a new market of people we can go after and help. But so most of my day, my structure of the week is basically Mondays are days where I write down all of the ideas that I have. And then I sit down throughout the day and I explore them. And I say, okay, these are all the things I want to do. If we wanted to do this, this is what it would cost in terms of time, energy, staff, you know, everything. Is it worth it or not? I make those decisions on Monday. I bring them to one of, you know, to my partner on Tuesdays and say, these are all the ideas that I had. Here's where I'm thinking we could go. Is there a place for us to put this on the calendar, or is this something we need to table for now? Tuesdays, I also film. So we do all of our media stuff on Tuesdays. In the morning, I write all of my programming. So all of my clients are taken care of before 10 a.m. We film from about 12 until 3. And then the evening is whatever nice to haves I want to do. Wednesdays are wide open right now. So I'm basically trying to figure out what the best thing to put on my Wednesdays are. Thursdays, I have most of my programming clients. So I program for about 30 people on a Thursday. I try to be done with that before noon. And then that's when I schedule a podcast. That's when I schedule media time for me to be on other people's podcasts, to write articles for people, whatever have you. And Fridays are whatever was left during the week that I didn't get done to hit my goal that I set for the week. And then weekends I spend with family.
What does programming mean? I feel like, in your guys' world, I hear that a lot. And I'm always like, what do they mean? Is it like just setting up what routines you're setting up for people or what they should be doing, like stretch-wise and flexibility-wise? Mm-hmm.
Whatever movement you need to be doing during the day, that's your program. So I'm writing your program, progressing your program, maintaining, reducing, whatever it might be in that time.
And then what things in your business have you not done? That was one thing as you started talking about these different ideas. It was like, what are they not doing that you're like, you've tabled for some period of time?
Oh, like things that I want to do that we haven't done at all yet.
Yeah. Or it's been on.
Yep. So we haven't launched a certification yet. We haven't, said, okay, this is, if you can do this, we are validating that you know what you're doing. We haven't launched that yet. That's something that's in the works. It's been in the works for 2 years, but it's actually going to come out this year. We haven't gone after aggressively working with any professional teams in the major field sports. That's something that I urgently want to do, but understand is not an urgent thing to get done. So it's not something that we're doing yet. We haven't yet done this. We just started doing this mentorship thing where we're working with coaches very intensely. And I ultimately think it'd be very cool to have a business model, an in-person business model, where we're teaching people how to run their gym in such a way that they are circumventing the physical therapist for people locally. Because there's still a market of people who want to be able to go somewhere to get well, as opposed to having to do it on their own. And I want to teach coaches and trainers how to do that, but we're not there yet.
That's interesting. Do you guys plan out everything you're doing the whole year ahead of time?
No. I write down all the things I want to accomplish, and then we start to, basically cherry pick what's the, we do a cost benefit analysis, a likelihood to be successful analysis, and then we choose the things that have the highest benefit, that have the highest likelihood to succeed.
So in this year, what stuff did you add, and what stuff did you add to your guys' plan versus not?
So we've never ramped up our one-on-one. So we have templated programs and we have one-on-one service. We've never ramped up our one-on-one before. The most people we've ever added in a month for one-on-one is now, we've quadrupled that in the first month of this year. So that's something that I want to be able to ramp up. I really want to get to helping people more one-on-one. I think that has huge value to not just our staff, but to people. The second thing is the mentorship is something that we're going to be hitting pretty hard. I'm really excited about it because it gives me the opportunity to help people solve problems in their own life, in their own business. I've never done that before. So I'm excited about, not formally at least.
But you want to help them be the mentor.
I want to be able to mentor them so that they can mentor other people. So for example, one of the problems that we're dealing with for somebody is this guy comes and he says, I'm a personal trainer. I make about $75,000 a year. I work at a Globo gym. I work from 7 a.m. to 9:30 at night some days, and I don't have any gaps in my day, maybe a small gap for lunch. And he's like, the only way for me to make more money is to see more clients. But if I see more clients, I don't have any time to myself. I'd like to have a kid this year. So we started working through, well, how can you make more money in less time doing what you do without having to launch an online business or do anything like that? So what it came down to is I said, you're basically, because of the gym that you're in, you're essentially paying $45 per hour per client rent. It's a lot of money. When you add up 130 sessions in a month, he's paying $5,500+ per month in rent to the gym he works at. So we started looking into, you could open your own facility for that. So we started looking into, are there places locally that you could rent $1,000 to be able to use your equipment? Here's $1,000 a month. You know it's coming. $1,500 a month. So his immediate homework is to start doing that, to look for local places, because there's more than 12 gyms within a 5-square-mile radius of where he lives. And it's like, good. Go call all 12 of those gyms, negotiate a rate that gets you in there, charge whatever you want to charge, and keep all of it. Now you can work half as much and make the same thing.
That's interesting. Have you experienced working with non CrossFit gyms or non?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So we've worked with professional baseball players. We've worked with track and field athletes. We've worked with lacrosse players. We've worked with my mother who doesn't play any sports. You know, we've worked with all kinds of different populations. It's just that, you know, if you run a Facebook ad with, you know, my mom on it, no one's clicking it. I love you, Mom, okay. But no one's clicking it. You know, it doesn't catch the attention of the audience that you're looking to catch. So having the elite athletes on board is not valuable from a financial perspective directly. It's valuable from an influence perspective.
Interesting. Cause then you guys are, I like that. That's a really good approach. It's like, hey, what's our concentrated, like let's own this market. And then we can start thinking about other markets.
Mm-hmm. I actually looked at Facebook when I thought about how we should do it. Every time I looked to reach out, I'm like, you know what? Facebook, and I know that's where you were in the beginning. That's why I bring it up. But Facebook was just college. It was nothing else. It was just colleges. They didn't go from college to everybody in the world in a minute. They spent years as just college. And then they were like, you know what? There's opportunity elsewhere. Let's branch out. And that hasn't been bad for them.
I think that's something that everyone thinks about and knows, but we don't do shit about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm even thinking about this with one of our businesses, which is kingsumo.com. Let me get your take as well. That'd be interesting. So like we have an online, it's a giveaway software. So let's say you wanted to give away a physical product, like, you know, a wrap, or you wanted to do like coaching, or you want to give away a book. And it's a way to get new people to hear about you, right? Through giveaways. And it works really well. Right now we're only on WordPress. Mm-hmm. And I've actually been debating, and this is something I think a lot of business owners are thinking about. Like, when do you start thinking, all right, well, let me move it from just CrossFit to all workouts, or from this demographic to another demographic? I guess, how have you thought about that? So that's something I'm trying to think, do I go WordPress to like everywhere, or WordPress to Shopify, or what's the best way to approach it?
That's a good question. So for us, what we've done is we've said, okay, CrossFit is our bread and butter. That's where we're going to start. And that's where we're going to be mostly probably forever. I mean, you know, as much as it would be great to be the general population's number one, I think we'd have to abandon CrossFit to do that. And it doesn't make sense, at least not right now, to go in that direction. So the way I look at it is, what are we spending on marketing? What are we spending in time on this kind of a message? If we have more time available and we spent it and we spent more money on this market in this space, would it grow at the same rate as if we put that same time, that same effort into a different market? And the answer for us has been, at this point, it makes sense to start to delve outside where, you know, we can throw more money and more time into CrossFit, and we will, because it's still the bread and the butter. Going after baseball, for example, that we know really, really well, is a valuable thing for us to be doing. We've already had professional baseball players come our way. It's worked for them. We have our proof of concept. Move that direction. We have the right people in that space who are already influencing people. So our leverage to get in is fairly good, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, it's easier for you to win there.
Yes. And there are parlays from baseball to elsewhere, you know, because I know I could help the 60-year-old woman who has Achilles pain from not being able to squat, but I don't know if I'll be able to get her a squat over the computer from across the country.
Interesting. Because there's people that you can, it's easier for you to help.
Yes. The person right now, the person who is experienced in the gym doesn't know it yet, but they want to be working with us, whether they're going to a gym like you or a CrossFit gym.
That's a good point. I mean, I guess it goes back to your earlier thing where there's probably a lot more people you can help than you think you've even helped.
Oh, I know there are. And when people within my company, I like to have a goal that I believe is real, that they all believe is insane. You know, it can't just be insane. But it needs to be something that I really feel like we can do, that they think I'm crazy for thinking, but that they're inspired by. So for me, they're like, you know, where do you see this thing going? And I say, people are going to start making the decision worldwide if they prefer to go to the physical therapist for their ailment or work with us online. That's what needs to happen. We need to become a household name where everybody in the world is making decisions about whether or not they want to go to their doctor because they have us as an option. And they know that if we're not right for them, we'll send them to their doctor.
I like that, man.
Thanks.
Yeah, I know. I think even for myself, it's making me reflect, because in my original thing, oh, let's go bigger and let's help everyone. And, you know, the past few days, I'm like, why don't we just keep helping the same people that work, and we'll go deeper on them. And then when we finally have reached everyone, which, you know, who knows when that'll ever happen, we can start even considering other people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's also, it happens naturally, you know, like there's someone who's in your space that you're going to help. That's going to be like, hey, my buddy doesn't do what I do, but do you think what you do would work for him? And it will. And then it's like, oh, okay, well, let's talk to this guy more. Let's see how it works for him. And then you start figuring out what your message to that market is.
No, I dig it, man. I dig it. Well, it has been cool to hear about your business. I didn't know about a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, it's been cool to talk about it. This is a totally different style of podcast that I've ever done. It's normally just me trying to find out more about the person I'm talking to.
What have you, I mean, in conclusion with this stuff, is what have you found out from having the podcast? Like, what have you found out for yourself?
A lot. So I've learned everything from training methodologies that I hadn't learned before to just the idea of having a podcast allows you to speak to people who can educate you that you would never be able to speak to otherwise. You know, for example, you get somebody, like I'm talking to you right now. If I didn't have a podcast, maybe we'd be on the phone. Maybe we wouldn't, you know, but there are people, especially in the fitness space, who want to become more well-known. They want their podcasts to be a part of their resume, if you will. So they're not going to talk to you unless you have some value to bring them. And there's a lot of value that you can extrapolate from them without asking them to do anything for you. So being able to say, hey, I have a podcast that I would love to have you on because you're an inspiring figure. I want to learn from you. They're happy to teach. That's probably been the biggest thing.
That is cool. It's kind of like an amazing way to just get, to get access to whoever you want.
Yeah. And there's also a level of who you're going to get access to. You know, like right now I'm not sending emails to Mark Cuban to come on my podcast. Because it's not worth his time yet. And the other thing is I've learned how to start talking to people to get them to come on the show. You know, in the beginning it was just Instagram direct message. Now there are people I'll write a handwritten letter to. You know, it's whatever needs to be done to get the person to know that I actually care about them, as opposed to I just want to leverage your following to get my show found.
That's actually really interesting. So that's been, I do like how you said in the beginning, though, you were doing just DMs like on Instagram.
That's it. I was like, hey, I want to interview you. What do you think? And they'd be like, I don't know. And I actually recently had somebody DM me saying, hey, I want to be on your podcast. And I get that happens a fair amount. And I asked them, like, you know, tell me why, sell me. Because I don't know who you are. You don't have a huge following. So what's the value in it for me? Essentially, what am I going to learn if I bring you on, is what I'm asking. And, you know, if he's listening, I feel bad, but he just listed credentials. I'm like, it's, you know, I'm not interested in that.
Yeah, I will say, because I have my podcast and, you know, this year I think it's interesting what you said really early on, which is how did the elite people win? Right. Because I think all of us, I don't think there's anyone who's like, hey, I want to have a mediocre life and I want to be average. You know, I really hope I just do okay. I don't think that's really, it's not too common you hear stuff like that. And so it made me reflect on like, yeah, I think a lot of it is what do you really want and how much you're actually really going after that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the other thing is a lot of people want and they have no idea how to go get it. You know, like I know, for example, right now when I tell my wife, she's like, you know, when are you going to be satisfied? When do you think you'll have enough? I'm like, I don't know if I ever will, but I don't even know how to get what I want to get yet. I don't know the way to get there. I had to learn it. So I think there's people out there who've never seen. So for example, I think there's people out there who have never known somebody who made $100,000 a year. They've never met someone who did it. So to them, making $100,000 a year is like, that doesn't happen where we live. You know, so I don't think that anyone aims for a mediocre life, but I think that there's a lot of people who their perception of what a mediocre life is might be different than yours. They might value something totally different than we value because they didn't even know that they could consider valuing something else.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, sometimes in life you don't realize what you can do until you've seen someone else do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel about mountain biking. I see, like, one of my buddies did a jump, and I was like, there's no way it's possible. He did it. I was like, oh, I guess people can do it.
See, my business partner got a mountain bike and immediately tore both of his hamstrings and concussed himself. And I told him, hang that bike up. If you get killed on a mountain bike, we're in trouble. You can't do that.
Yeah, shit. Yeah, you need him alive. You know, one thing in inclusion for selfishly is that my girlfriend and I both, like, we have, like, kind of lower back issues, and she wanted to see someone locally. Mm-hmm. So does it make sense to see someone online like yourself, or how do you actually, if you, let's say you're set on finding someone local like she is, how do you evaluate? Do you just go on Yelp? Is there a website? Do you ask for, how do you find someone, ask for a recommendation? What would you do?
That's a great question. The first answer to that is look for people who are living the lifestyle that you want to be able to live and ask them who they've seen. So it's not just asking your friends who they went to that worked for them, because you have friends who don't care. You have friends who just, are working a 9-to-5 in a desk and they just want to be able to do that without pain. They don't care about mountain biking, or they don't care about going for runs every day like maybe you or your girlfriend do. And it's nothing against those people, but they're not going to seek out and value the same kind of professional that you are, just a different kind of person. So look for people who live the kind of lifestyle that you have ambitions of living, and ask them who they would go to for their treatment. That's how I always tell people to find somebody locally. If you're going to look for somebody remotely, you don't need to look any further. You're already looking where you need to be. You're staring at them across the computer screen, and I can tell you how to get linked up. Because I really, frankly, I don't know anybody else who's doing this online, at least not at the level that I know that we're doing it at.
Interesting. So, but yeah, it's good. So basically referrals. A lot of your stuff is pretty, I love it because it's very straightforward. It's like, hey, just do this, then you're going to do this, then you do this. It's all like, straight into the point. I love that.
Well, that's kind of always been what we've wanted to be that separates us. It's a lot of smart people don't get what they think they should get because they're too smart to dumb it down. And it's when I talk to somebody about, hey, you have low back pain and you can do 20 step ups on your left leg at this height with this weight, and you can only do 3 on your right leg. Let's fix that. They're like, well, how is that going to get rid of my back pain? I'm like, I don't know, but it's not good to be that different side to side. So let's fix it. See what happens. It doesn't have to be like, it's this muscle not firing at this angle. So we need to, it doesn't have to be like that.
No, that's cool, man. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to appreciate your time. And thank you for chatting with me about how your business got going. It's cool to hear the history of it.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. This was a lot of fun. This was different than what I anticipated. It was good.
What were you anticipating?
I had no idea what to anticipate, but I was more looking at something where, like, I think I thought that it was going to be, all right, Sean, what's your list of questions? What do you want to know about? And I was going to ask you and get your advice and thoughts on it. And I didn't really know what to ask because, frankly, I don't know what I don't know.
Well, I think to the point of what you actually said earlier is the most true. Like, I don't think of myself as an expert. Like, even now I'm learning all the time, and I'm mm-hmm. still figuring out things sometimes for the first time. Sometimes I thought I knew and I don't. And a lot of the advice is like, you find things that are actually, Occam's razor, which is like the simplest answer generally is going to be the right answer.
Yeah.
But I think we like to confuse ourselves.
Yeah. Cause we want to find something more complex to solve the problem, but it doesn't have to be.
No, I completely agree.
And that's the crux of our business. It doesn't matter what your MRI says. If you're not surgical, we want to try to help you.
I feel you. All right, boss. Well, I appreciate the time, Sean. It was good chatting. Nice meeting you as well. If you're ever in Austin, Texas, let me know.
I'm going to try to get my ass to Austin this summer.
All right. Well, me, you, and Mike, we can do a workout out here.
Sounds like a plan to me. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, boss. Same here, man.
Wait, before you go, is there anywhere I should tell people to find you?
They can check out Noah Kagan Presents podcast or check out our companies. The best place for our company is sumo.com or appsumo.com. Basically tools to help small businesses grow.
Sumo.com or appsumo.com?
Yeah, it's tools to help small businesses grow.
Okay. And they'll understand what that means when they get there. Or do you want to tell them what it means?
Hopefully they'll figure it out. We basically what I get excited about is finding businesses that I love and then helping promote them. So we've created a lot of different tools that businesses can promote them for them to promote themselves. So appsumo.com is tools to help businesses grow. Sumo.com is email marketing. So if you want to grow your business, email marketing is the number one way online. King Sumo is giveaways. It's the best way to get new traffic to your website. And then we have briefcasehq.com, which is our Netflix for software. So it's basically all the software that any small business owner will need to run an online company.
That's cool. I like that.
It's not too shabby. I love what I do.
I bet. I'll make sure people can find it, but it sounds like if you're the one who's helping small businesses get exposure, that you don't need my help with it.
I think everyone could always use help. I think that's kind of some of your message. I don't know if you noticed that or not. It's like, hey, let me go ask my friends for some of the help.
Mm-hmm, that's true. You're not wrong about that.
I think we all want it to be more challenging than that, but it's like, no, just go ask your friends. Like, hey, here's what I need help with. And most of the time they'll actually help you. I think you'd be surprised.
You're probably right.
All right, Sean, you keep it real, brother. Thanks for having me, man.
You got it. I look forward to hearing from you and your girlfriend about their low backs.
Yeah, me too.
All right. See you later.
All right. See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Active Life podcast today. I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you did, please make sure you head to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating so that we can grow and reach and help more people. If you're looking for more from me and my team, head to performancecarerx.com. All the help you're looking for is right there. Until next time, guys, I'm Dr. Sean Pastuch, and the process is the goal.